Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Five one double 51 is our text number. By the way, very shortly we will be announcing the winners of the John Byrne short story competition. Thousands of entries, 300 words or less, three different categories, over 7,500 in prize money, and we will be announcing the winners. And actually, they will be hopefully reading their own stories of that got them to the. Into the competition. Apparently the standard was incredible and the themes were fascinating. Okay, let me go to Deirdre first, because Deirdre, another angle that's been thrown up on the coronavirus is 3D printers, because there's a tweet yesterday from our own Ciara Ní Bhriain here in RTE, a fantastic journalist, and working away, and she said our living room has been transformed into a PPE production line, personal protection. All credit to my husband Greg and his resourcefulness, and it looks like they have 1, 2, 3, 4 from the photograph, 5, 6 are even more 3D printers, and from what I can get, there he's actually manufacturing the an element for the those visors, those heavy duty visors that medics have to wear, you know, the one you pull down completely over your face, and I can see them on one of the machines. And also I heard this morning on the BBC World Service, two Italian young lads are have come up with a way of, with a little piece they made on the 3D printer, of converting snorkeling masks into ventilator masks. And they've made all the drawings and technology available to anyone who wants to make it. Obviously, Italy is in an awful state, to say the least. But Deirdre, you have a 3D printer. What's the problem?
Well, actually, I have two 3D printers.
Oh, well done.
There are broadly two different technologies used in 3D printing.
Okay.
One does, if you like, large, not very accurate things, and another technology does small, very accurate things. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is that I've been watching this. I mean, I've been watching how 3D printing has been used to, you know, help with PPE and other things.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what's needed, how many are needed, or where it's needed. And as well as that, I have also heard that some of the designs for this stuff out there, some of those designs don't actually work.
Okay.
So I would, you know, really love to have some proper guidance from the HSC, from people on the front line, as to what's needed, where it's needed, and what works and what doesn't work, so that I can get working here.
And I think I saw, I think his name was Dave Connolly. I can't find it because I'm on air now, but I think I saw earlier today a man called Dave Connolly tweeting about his son and his three, he's only a young lad, he's about 12, 13. With his 3D printer, he's manufacturing protective door handles for his local fire station. Tell us, how does a 3D printer work, Deirdre?
Well, as I said, there are broadly two different technologies. But I guess the way that it works is that you have a material which is put down on a thin layer on a bed or whatever, mm-hmm. and then the 3D printer moves up by a tiny amount. I mean, maybe 0.1 of a millimeter, 0.2 of a millimeter, 0.03 of a millimeter, and then puts down another layer, and then it goes up and puts down another layer, and eventually you build up whatever it is that you're manufacturing. I mean, these stories that you're telling about these 3D printers in living rooms and whatnot.
Hmm.
I live in the Midlands, so I live in Longford. So, I mean, if there's anybody in and around Longford who does need something which I could produce on my 3D printers, then, you know, I'd absolutely. I mean, my father, unfortunately, is immunocompromised, so I, mm-hmm. you know, I'm really motivated to do my best to try and tackle this damn virus.
And Deirdre, what do you put into a 3D printer to get your object at the other end, so to speak?
Well, the two different technologies. For the technology which is large but not as accurate, you buy spools of plastic, which get melted by the printer and then put down on these layers. Now, those spools, for a kilogram of plastic, it costs like 25 to 30 euro. Okay. So the cost of producing things is very small. For the other technology, you buy a liquid, which is quite a bit more expensive, which gets put down in a vat, and there's a chemical reaction involving ultraviolet light, which solidifies it and it builds up layers that way.
And what have you used it to manufacture?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot of money, so the main thing that I have been using to manufacture is upgrades from my 3D printer to make it work better. But I also am involved in some videography, so I've produced things to help me attach lights to tripods.
Okay.
I'm involved in electronics, so I've used it to create electronic boxes.
Wow. Where do you get the drawings or the algorithms or whatever you insert in the printer to tell it what to do, what to make?
There's a couple of websites where people who are very good at these designs can put up their designs. But as well as that, I mean, one of the things that I did was I fixed one of my toilets because there was a problem. There was a bit that was broken, so I just took it out. I took a micrometer to it, and I measured the hell out of it, and I drew it up in a program on my computer and then printed out a replacement part, and that toilet is now working fine.
Well done. Well done. Are they expensive to buy?
It depends on, largely, I mean, how much do you want to spend? The cheapest ones will be maybe 150 euro, median will be maybe 300 to 500, and of course the expensive ones will be a grand or more, you know?
I think it's fantastic. It's incredible resourcefulness around at the moment. So what you're looking for, is there any... And the HSE on so many levels, but on the technological and level have been superb. But you're saying, are there any drawings or whatever that for 3D printers that the HSE could put up online and people would manufacture to that spec?
Exactly, yeah. And as well as that, where they need it. And unfortunately, I'm also dependent on public transport.
So how many
are needed, they need it, and the designs. I'd love to help out in whatever way I can.
Okay, well done. How are you managing generally? You mentioned your father there, Deirdre.
Yes, he's all right. I mean, he's living in Dublin. Hi, Dad, if you're listening. He's okay. He's isolating like mad.
Is he okay?
And I'm okay. I mean, I'm actually one hell of an introvert, so I mean, it's not much of a change to my lifestyle to be isolating at home. I don't need to tell you what sort of a weird time it is.
Okay, Deirdre, thanks indeed. Put it out there, or anyone who has. Maybe other 3D printer owners have managed to locate websites or drawings or whatever that have already been proven to be of use. Thanks.
I mean,
that would be great.
I just need to know that the HSE would actually find these useful.
Well done, Deirdre. Thanks indeed.
Okay, 51551,
wash your hands. And Joe at rt.ie is the simple email. Let me bring in Gary Riley. Gary, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
The COVID-19 payment, a lot of people didn't realise what you're about to tell us, and that is that there's a certain group of workers who are ineligible.
Regardless
of their circumstances.
Yeah, we found this out last week. I'm the owner of a small business with 7 staff.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 of the staff left for personal reasons, and we decided to get the 5 of us together and see what we could do. We're not open.
Okay.
And wanted to sort of pay everyone in full through the next 12 weeks. And with the help of the wage subsidy scheme, it was going to be a huge help.
Okay.
Until we found out that there was a cap.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone earning over 960 euro, you got 70% of nothing.
Oh, you're not eligible to apply even?
No. We were told this by Revenue which would have been a great help to keep everyone going.
So who in your company would be earning over 960 per week?
There's two of the senior guys here.
Okay.
Would be earning that. And we've other staff which were eligible for the 410, and then that gets reduced as well. So we had another staff member eligible for 350, and then we had two staff just over the 960. And with all that combined, it would have been great.
And the reasoning, I don't know if we're going to get much sympathy, you're going to get much sympathy, Gary, but the reasoning is that, what they say, people who are earning that amount could fall back on their savings, is it?
Well, it must be. Revenue told us that they were really looking after the lower earners in society.
Yeah, that's a priority. Everyone agrees with that. But does that mean middle management generally are people who are above the average industrial wage? Well, significantly above the average industrial wage. They're not eligible for a penny.
No, they're absolutely eligible.
So what does it?
Well, we were told by the government when this wage subsidy scheme came out, it was for everybody. It was for, it was for staff, it was for sole traders, it was for small businesses, and we were delighted. Mm-hmm. We're delightedly, we have to close up, and we said, this is great, we're going to get a bit of help. And it was only €350 of a wage subsidy for the two other staff members. It wasn't 70% of their salary. And we were told, no, it's zero.
Oh, I thought I did misread it. I thought it was 70% of your salary or 350, whichever is the greater. Do you follow me? That the max you could get was 350.
The max you could get is 350, regardless.
If you're earning over 960 a week, you get nothing. You can't even apply.
You can't
regardless
even apply
of how long. What does it mean for your company?
Well, it means that we had things in place, as in we tried our best. We cancelled personal pension funds for the next 3 months. We have put the company cards, tried to get the banks to help us on that. We've done as much as we could that everyone could get paid for the next 12 weeks.
And I know we had a call, was it Gemma about Centra? Gemma, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. The COVID payment, what's your discovery and point you wish to make, Gemma?
I suppose it's linked, but we would have a number of part-time staff, students, who would work with us maybe Saturdays, Sundays, some of the evening.
You're in a Centra?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it would apply to any of the retail frontline shop workers that are still working. A lot of their friends, also students, may have had jobs in pubs or clothes shops, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And as of the 12th of March, any of those shops that closed down, those part-timers are in receipt of the flat rate pandemic unemployment payment, so it's €350 a week. They may have been earning prior to that €70-80 a week. Our guys are still coming to work. We need them. We're still open. We're still, ticking away.
Yeah, busier than ever, I suspect. More important than ever is probably the best way.
More important, maybe, yeah. They're putting themselves out on the front line.
Yeah, of course.
They're on maybe 10 euro, 10 cent an hour.
Yeah.
And it seems to be very inequitable that they're getting just the same as they would normally have received, and yet their friends who aren't working are in €350 a week. There was no prorating of that payment.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a flat rate. I think the college actually wrote to the students and said, you're entitled to claim for this if you do lose your job.
And you're saying there are situations where people who were previously earning through part-time work 70 to 100 euro a week are now getting 350.
Absolutely, yeah.
When the business closes.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. It's so unfair that those that are still on the front line, working away, are earning so much less. But we can't afford to let them go. We need them. We still are trying to operate.
Okay. And they're entitled to nothing.
There's no extra benefit for them.
Yeah.
No. We're still, paying them their normal.
But your point is, if your store closed tomorrow, their income could quadruple.
Yes.
Wow.
And it's quite demoralising, to be honest. And we can't afford to let them go because we need them.
Of course.
And I think it's probably spread across a lot of other retailers. I can see them looking for people, you know, they're advertising for people. But it's going to be quite difficult for them to fill those roles if people get 350 staying at home instead of going into work part-time to fill a short-term need.
Yeah. And is there any way the business can help out? The company, the shop? Basically.
With the shop? What I'm hoping to do is to apply for, I think when your other caller was talking about the COVID-19 support. And that will allow us to continue paying staff even though they're on shorter hours. So,
but would that only kick in for the employers if your income is down 25%? And is the shop income down 25%?
So it is. When I don't put any detail because it changes day to day, but yes, it is a lot quieter now.
Okay, because
people are rightly staying at home and they're rightly, you know, we're just...
And what's been hit most in your store? Like, do you sell newspapers?
The biggest, change would be in our petrol sales.
Yeah, of course.
It's a garage forecourt, so people aren't travelling, so there'd be a massive change there.
Okay, petrol.
Yeah.
Okay, Gemma, thanks for highlighting that. And Gary, thanks for highlighting that the other end of the system, so to speak.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And young people again doing magnificent things. Michael Dwyer is in Gorey. Michael, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. What have you set up?
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago we set up Gorey Community Support Group. We've started out delivering groceries to people in need here in the area, prescriptions from chemists. And thankfully the Redmond Hotel Group have come on board as well. Tommy Redmond there has been so generous in providing. We were delivering over 100 meals to people in need in the Gorey district area every day here. So it's a really tremendous success. And we're just so grateful to have some great people in the community from the Navy Energy A Club, Gorey Rugby Club, and we've linked in with Community Gardaí, including Sergeant Evelyn Redden as well. So it's a really tremendous story in some very difficult times for some people.
So it's there's cars involved, obviously, is there?
Yeah. Plenty of cars available, but we have fine tuned now at the moment that the delivery route across the region that involves six routes, and we've six loyal sets of volunteers that cover those routes on a daily basis.
Well done. And the cost, like fuel and...
That's what blows my mind, Joe. Like, these are people that some have lost their jobs, some are teachers, these are total volunteers. They're not seeking a cent from this. They just get such an overwhelming sense of pride in helping their local community. And it's just the stories that come out of it, Joe. Like, you love hearing the real genuine stories of people. Like, it's the types of people that, like, have no family here and they have family in England. So the family in England is worrying about them here, but they just know then that, thankfully, there is a local group there willing to help their father or mother. And it might not be as distant as that. Maybe it's family in Dublin that might have fathers or mothers down in Gorey or Cortown. So you can search us on Facebook. We're Gorey Community Support Group. We've over 1,000 likes, and I'm fortunate to have the backing of my family and my girlfriend behind me. It's been a great success, and we hope to get through this.
Well done, Michael. And Michael, what do you do in the real world insofar as we'll ever be back to the world we knew four weeks ago?
I'm Parliamentary Assistant to Wexford TD James Brown, so I'm fortunate
he gives me
the time to do these type of things. But it's
and Gorey's a great town. Great people. Must be one of the nicest towns in Ireland, even in terms of its configuration and its selection of shops, from magnificent art shops to bookshops to bakeries to restaurants to Heaton's, which is now Sports Direct. Incredible.
It's 400 years old last year, Joe, so a lot of history behind us. So, it's a great town, and I'm sure it'll revitalise itself after this short.
Fingers crossed. Well done, Michael Dwyer. I mentioned 3D printers earlier on. Let's go to Kay Verrins. Kay, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Tell me about your 3D printer life.
Right. Well, we've got a. I've got a group. This well, it's not my group. I'm in a group, 3D Printing Ireland, and we started messing around with masks and tools and all sorts of gadgets about a month and a half ago. Until we found from the front line that what they really need is face shields.
Okay.
So a face shield, if you were to buy it retail, it usually costs at least €10 plus.
Okay.
We've managed to find designs that can bring the cost right down to a euro or slightly more.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's the material in the face shield? Are these a visor ones or?
Oh yeah, these are visor face shields. So the materials, the face shields, the shield itself, we can use acetate, which would be kind of PVC binder covers. And then the template itself would be made from plastic. Like I use PLA myself, but people use PETG or anything else they can find.
And are they accepting them?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, well done.
So we started off with Navin and the Matter.
Okay.
And I called my local hospital, and I'm delivering now to Cavan and Monaghan hospitals. And I got a call earlier on from Crumlin, so not from like Crumlin, from one of the people that I know was working in Crumlin.
Yeah,
looking for help as well. So it's all over the place.
And the actual the design of the visor, can you share that with other 3D people,
so to speak?
3D owners.
Well, the design, we looked for a number of designs. So the one we started off with was one by a company called Prusa, who had tested it with the Czechoslovakian, the Czech hospitals, and they were happy with that design. But we also use another company's 3D Verkstam in, I think they're in Norway. And they've tested with their local hospitals as well and tuned it. So local hospital is happy with the Verkstam one.
Okay, just spell that out for us, okay, so people can...
3D Verkstam. That's 3D and Verkstam.
And if you go explain it then.
If there are printers looking for this information, they could just go onto the Facebook page, 3D Printing Ireland.
Okay. But the key is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing your name right, K-A-E. The key is, K, so to speak, that this one has been accepted by the HSE.
Yes, now not officially by the HSE itself,
but by hospitals.
By its individual branches, yes.
Okay, but the hospitals, when did you deliver the first one, say, to Navin or Cavan?
Well, the Cavan Hospital, I was speaking to one of the project managers there about a week ago, and they came out to me for samples.
Mm-hmm.
I met them in a car park. It was like some sort of shady deal.
Brilliant.
So I handed over a number of different designs, and they brought it back to their teams, their infectious control teams, to have a look over it. So they just chose one, and they wanted just small changes, and they were small enough that it was just basically cutting the shield into certain shapes.
Wow, brilliant. Will you send us in a photograph of one of them, Kay, and we'll put it up on our Twitter feeds and our website. I think that's a fantastic. And at a euro a pop. Now I know that doesn't include the cost of buying the machine in the first place.
Yeah.
Are you absorbing those costs yourself?
That's actually, we got the local town team involved in that. Well, we're all over the country now. In my case, I got the local town team involved in that. I called up a friend of mine who's in the town team, and they said they'd absorb the cost because they were going to use the money for a Patrick's Day parade and stuff like that, and that's not happening.
Oh, yeah. Great. Magnificent, Kay. And Kay, your name, I said here, K-A-E-V-E-R-E-N's.
Yes.
What part of Cavan is the Verrins family from? Are you one
people have asked about that before.
Are you one of the Verrins of Black Lion, are you?
It's actually the most Irish name that you could possibly have because nobody outside this country has ever had it.
Explain that to me in
well, I was born with a different name, didn't like it, got it changed by Deepo.
Well done. and your parents, when you told them, I don't know whether Mr. or Mrs. Paddy Morphy, when you told them...
Oh, no, they still call me by my original name, but that's just the way it is. That's just...
And how did they take to you changing your name?
Well, I've always been a bit individualistic, so there's not very much they could do about it.
Well done. And where did you come up with K-A-E, Verrens, V-E-R-E-N-S?
Oh, I read a lot. I can't remember specifically in that case. I think it was some horror book I was reading.
Okay, and are you happy? How long have you had that name?
Oh, 20 years. About 20 years, yeah.
Oh, and so would you go again?
Change the name again?
Yeah.
No,
okay.
No, I'm too established now.
And do you want to tell me your birth name, so to speak?
Nope.
Why?
That's gone. The name is a different person.
Okay. Now, you're still friendly with your parents, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank God, I haven't, my nerves are gone there for a sec. And how do I pronounce a K? Is it K?
It is K, yes.
K, yeah. Well done. Well, have you a middle name, afraid to ask?
No.
Have you a middle name?
No.
Okay. Well done. And everyone, all your buddies know you as K?
Yes.
And if whatever life we all lead, if you were to have children, so to speak...
Oh, yes, I have kids, yeah.
They
have my surname, but that's up to them what they do with it.
Okay. Fantastic. And there's no meaning in V-E-R-E-N-S, apart from that it was a character in a book you read once.
No, there's no meaning to it. There's no point having a name if it's just like your neighbours, you know, because some people say, like, "Hey, Joe," and everyone turns around.
Oh, I think that's brilliant. Have you come across anyone else who's changed their name to a character in a book that they like a Dickens character?
Oh, yes. Actually, yes. There's a friend of mine who's currently living in London, and he's called himself Paul Monteith. And that would be named after a character from Dune.
Okay. Paul
Monteith.
Monteith, okay. Is it easy to change your name?
Yes, you just have to have a reason, really. It's a deed poll. You just, I think it cost something like, it was £50 when I did it. And you just have to have a reason that a judge will accept.
Such as?
And my reason at the time was I just wasn't happy with the current name. You know, so it doesn't have to be a good reason.
Yeah, okay, it just has to be a reason.
A reason, but what a
about,
reason, yeah.
But, okay, what about all your, if you have them, your electricity accounts and your bank accounts and your credit cards and your library card and...
Yeah, well, once you change your name, you can change everything else.
And
it takes time.
And you only have to do it once.
Yeah, it's a domino effect.
And if I put Verrins into the Aircom online directory, do any other Verrins come up?
Not unless my family has grown without me knowing.
Okay. Well done. Apparently it doesn't, Rebecca's telling me there. Okay. I wonder what I would change my name to. Anyway. Well done, Kay. So you are, what do you do in real life?
In real life, I'm a programmer.
Oh, well done.
Computer programmer.
Well done. For who?
Yeah.
Who do you work for yourself, probably?
A company called Field Motion. We do apps and, you know, we basically let people fill in forms on their phone devices and stuff like that.
And how are you managing in the current crisis, apart from coming up with that brilliant idea? Well done. And actually, how is your company managing in the new world?
Well, personally, I can work from anywhere. But
okay.
The problem is our customers can't. You know, our customers need to get out on the road and go talk to people. So it's a knock-on effect. Like, even if you think you're safe because you could work from anywhere, you have to think about your customers.
Yeah, well done, Kay. Any of your children taking after you in terms of innovation and invention and vivaciousness and colour?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they work away on their own things. I don't tell them what to do, but, you know, like my son does computers and my daughter does her ukulele and she's doing computers as well in the local Coda Dojo.
Okay. No. How are they managing the lockdown?
Oh, happy enough. My son doesn't even notice. He stays in his room anyway.
Okay. Well done, Kay Verrins. Thank you so much. And that's a great idea. And the website again, where you can get all these drawings.
If you go to Facebook and just run a search for 3D Printing Ireland.
Okay.
And just ask in there.
You're a star. Have you won awards before?
Awards? I don't know. I don't keep track of these things.
Okay. You sound brilliant. Okay, Kay. Would you send us a photograph of the visor?
I will.
Good man. Good man. Well done. That's Kay Verrins from Monaghan, one of the Verrins of... it's Monaghan. He's one of the Carrickmacross Verrins, if he's in my time. He's one of the Blackline ones. And Blackline Verrins. No, he's the only one in the country. 51551. Wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And by the way, the award-winning short stories and all the finalists and lots more... is now up on the Irish Times website, and I'm told we've retweeted it on at Joe Liveline and at RTE Liveline. So there's plenty, and retweet it. Get as much publicity for those fantastic writers from age 8 upwards that we had on the programme earlier on. Olive, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe Duffy.
How are you keeping?
I'm good.
You ended up having, could it be described as a difficult conversation with your family?
Well, actually, no. I've had that conversation a long time ago.
Okay.
And my family know how I feel. But primarily what I want to say to you is, I think it's very important now that people would kind of write out their advance directives and make sure that their family know where their stuff is and all that sort of thing, because this is getting very alarming. And I hate to bring down the lovely, joyous tone of your show with Tom and Ryan and Emma and their little stories.
No, thanks for mentioning them as well. You're great.
But
Olive, what arrangements have you decided on, so to speak?
Well, it's not so much the Irish Hospice published a book there
back in
2018, I think, called Think Ahead Farm.
Yeah.
And it's very explicit. It makes you think, talk, tell, record, and review. And Des and I, I'm in my 70s. I'm 73.
Okay.
I'm having a grand time home here cocooning. I couldn't ask for better care. I've great neighbours.
Okay.
I've great... even had the community guards call in and see was I all right.
Isn't that fantastic?
I'm not having a hard time.
Yeah.
But there's questions to be asked when you're my age and Des's age with what they now term... Well, they've always termed it as comorbidities. And I don't want to go on a ventilator. I don't want any life support resuscitation.
Mm-hmm.
And I really kind of think it's an area that, whilst it's kind of hardcore ground to cover on airways or television, it needs to be discussed.
And when you say comorbidities, Olive,
do
you want to tell me what your comorbidities are?
Well, initially, I would have been a fairly healthy individual up into my mid to late 30s. And then I got what I was diagnosed at the time as osteoarthritis. And that was a bit of a bummer from a pain point of view. But it advanced, I'll tell you, into something that has to be something more than that. I've had two hip replacements, one hip revision, two knee replacements on the one side. I have arthritis in my back, my hands, my neck.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, we'll say, of the last knee replacement, which is only 2 years ago, I got deep vein thrombosis and then pulmonary embolism. So the comorbidities are a nightmare for the consultants.
Yeah.
And I can see that. And they're also costly. And really, I suppose what I'm trying to say, when you ask me, did I have a difficult conversation with my family? I have a son and daughter, and they're wonderful. And I have two lovely granddaughters. And they know how I feel. And I suppose what I feel is practical about the life I've had. My father had a great saying, when we'd go to Hoth as kids and we'd be in swimming and we'd be in for too long, he'd call us and he'd say, come on now, girls, you've had your innings.
Okay.
And it was a great word. We didn't quite know what it meant. But I've had my innings if something happens to me next week.
And, well, you're young, you're 73. But you're saying if God forbid, you got the virus.
Yes.
This awful thing, COVID-19.
It's dreadful. And emerging all the time.
And what is your decision?
Well, you see, I have no decision, Joe, because any kind of euthanasia is illegal in Ireland, as you know.
Yeah.
I would like to die at home, but I don't relish the idea of gasping for breath and feeling as if I'm drowning in the room, maybe alongside my husband, who is fretting and upset and older than me and has much worse health than I have. And you know, it's a worry that one will survive the other. And I mean, what's the point in calling an ambulance for somebody who sort of has all I have?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if you're coming across too bleak, Olive.
No, I'm not being bleak, Joe. I don't think for 1 minute I'm going to get that.
Okay,
I mean,
brilliant.
As I say, we're cocooned to high heaven.
Yeah,
from
great.
Our leader is minding us, and the guards, and my neighbours, and my daughter, and you know, I'm not being bleak, but look, it's a discussion that has to be had.
And that book from the hospital, I think it's on their website as well. The Irish
Hospice
Foundation can be downloaded.
Yeah, it's really you leave no kind of horrible jobs for your family after.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll have to die sometime. And I mean, I don't want to. I love my life. I'm happy out. And so is Des. And we were laughing today. We were saying we're like a monastery here. We're so very well behaved. And
it's just, is it just the two of you in the house?
Just Des and I, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I heard Simon Harrison this morning, cocooning. It means try and stay away from each other as much as you can.
Check that, Joe.
Well, you're all over. Don't tell me you're all over each other.
I'm not all over. I'm too old to be all over. But the thing about it is, if you're both in the same house, there's a lot of common sense. If you're both in the same house, you're not going places. You're not touching things. And you're not meeting anybody.
Nobody's coming in.
No.
Okay.
And I mean...
And you're not going out.
And I'm not. And the most bold thing we do is we kiss goodnight.
Ah.
There's just a lot of positivity in life for young people. That's the way I feel.
Okay.
Look,
but Olive, you've been through two hips done, one twice. First hip at 46, chronic arthritis, one knee replaced, the same knee again replaced. DVT, deep vein thrombosis.
Uh-huh.
You got pneumonia when you were 38. Was that the beginning of your problems?
I don't know, because when you look up the word comorbidities, it's conditions co-occurring with a primary condition.
Yeah.
Now, I had pneumonia as a child and I was in Cherry Orchard and that, but I recovered from that. I was fine. I got married. I had babies. I had a healthy life and I walked a lot. We lived in County Clare and we had gorgeous walks, and I'd go out and put Gayburn on the Walkman and go... Yeah. You know, up one road, lovely country road, and down another. But suddenly I began to have pain. And I live with absolute chronic pain. It's at times now, I really would feel I'd had enough, you know. Arthritic pain is a nasty pain. Any pain is. But when you're asking me about, you know, what started it, I've no idea.
Yeah.
They're all pathogenically related, I think, and heart disease is another one that has all sorts of, you know, add-ons and vascular peripheral this sort of thing. Anyway, I sound like a medical
Do you get chest infections, by the way?
Yes, I have been prone to that.
Even though, as you tell us in your country, you never smoked a cigarette in your life?
Never. Okay.
Stay with us, Olive, would you? I want to keep talking to you after this break. Stay with us, put the kettle on, quick.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Rachel wants to agree with Olive. Olive is still there, Olive Cunningham. Go ahead, Rachel.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Olive. Yeah, I was delighted to hear that lady talking. I just think it's really practical, and it's the most important thing you should be doing, really, is thinking about what your wishes are for, you know, in the event that you might become, you know, you might want to be thinking about do not resuscitate, or what you want to do after you've died. I don't understand why people shy away from it.
And what prompted you, Rachel? You sound even younger than Olive.
Oh, thanks, Joe.
And Olive is young.
I'm 49.
Yeah.
I suppose I've always had this idea. My dad used to always say he wanted to be cremated, and I said, "Oh, I want to be cremated too." And I think that at the time that was kind of unusual. And recently, then I found out about a graveyard down in Wexford that is a green graveyard. You know, you become a tree afterwards.
People are dying to get into it, Rachel.
They are. I'm dying to be an old oak tree eventually. And
that type of program.
That was kind of the start of it. And then I became a single mom. And I also felt it was really important that if anything happened to me, that my wishes for my daughter for her future would be laid out. And plus, I knew there would be an estate there, so it was important that estate was managed. You know, that I spoke to people. And I don't understand, a lot of my friends are my age, say, as I said, I'm 49, and a lot of the time people kind of say, oh, well, you know, we'll deal with that next year, or, you know, there's stuff going on. I think it's really important to do it. And people associated with people who are more elderly, you know, that you're coming towards the end of your life, I think it's important from the very beginning. And then you can update it as time goes on, you know, as things change.
And
I'm really happy that I actually updated it in February, and then this thing came out, COVID-19, and I was like, well, okay, I've the shopping in now, and I've the will updated, I'm ready. Do you get me?
Okay, right.
I feel all the better for it. I don't think it's a morbid thing at all. It's kind of peace of mind.
You agree, Olive, obviously?
Oh, very much so.
Okay.
And you know, everything Rachel said, it makes sense. It's not an easy conversation to have. But apart from all that in the Think Ahead booklet, they have practicalities as well about where your stuff is. People can put their hand on anything belonging to you.
Okay.
And I recently, fairly recently buried my older sister. And my God, that woman was so methodical. She had everything.
Okay, stay with us, both of you, please. 51551, wash your hands.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we come to an end. All I want to say to Olive Cunningham and Rachel, to both of you, stay with us. Back tomorrow, 1:45, Rebecca Meehan produced. And Ray Darcy is next.